sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China's markets plunge, while U.S. markets still holding strong. Preliminary numbers from Black Friday, well, they're in. We'll talk about that and key levels for the S&P and major indices. All this and much more on episode number 440 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hope your Thanksgiving was full of family and festivities and, of course, some good food. Thanksgiving came and went. We went to some relatives' house for traditional turducken. After we had done a family 5K, we finished up according to our ages. In other words, the younger finished obviously a lot faster than the older in our family, but that was kind of fun. I'll tell you something. We went out to Fort Lauderdale Beach, right on the beach, right on the road that parallels the beach, and we did the 5K. Now, just wanted to set this up for you. It's kind of warm still down here, and the wind was blowing at about 35, 40 miles an hour. Right off of the beach, the sand is just whipping right in your face and your whole side of your body as you're standing there, as you're running, kind of giving you a bit of a a bit of a sand rub down. And it was pretty tough because it was really dry and nasty, but we did it. Not a big deal, the 5K, but we did it and had a good time doing that. Hopefully you spend some time with family as well, relaxing, resting, getting yourself the vacation time that you deserve. And hopefully you had some good time again with your family on Thanksgiving. We did some cooking. We actually smoked some duck and turkey legs, made some duck soft tacos with peanut sauce and a mango salsa, did some boating, had some lunch out on the boat. Very nice, relaxing. So again, hopefully you did so as well, and you're getting geared up for the rest of the year because Monday is the end of the month. Monday is November 30th, and then we start on to December. And I got to tell you something, there's a lot of things that are going on early in the month of December that we need to take a look at. And we'll take a look, first of all, before we talk about anything else, what happened last week with this holiday shortened week, some economic updates, and also what to expect for next week. So let's kind of take a look back at what went on. We saw that consumer confidence, probably one of the things that was most interesting about the week in terms of economic reports, was that the Conference Board put out their Consumer Confidence Index, and it pretty much, I guess the best way to describe it is it plummeted. Dropped about 8.5 points from the revised number that we saw in October that was 99. So the final number was for the month of October was 90.4. And a lot of the analysts really expected that we would see that number hold very well. But for whatever reason, there has been an interesting divergence from what markets are doing, from what consumers are spending, and from the actual report on consumer confidence. Usually, there's a lag. There's always a lag, or you know, a little pre-lag or a post-lag, but this is just not figuring very well lately. So maybe there was some carryover from maybe September, August. There were some expectations of job growth over the next few months that people felt they really weren't going to get much more increases in their wages, etc. Now, the University of Michigan also came out with their sentiment index, and that declined to 91 from about 93. Now, as I mentioned, there's been this divergence. Well, consumer spending ticked up a little bit. We saw that in October, we saw a little bit, just a 0.1% increase in personal spending. And that was good. So there was also durable goods came out, and we saw that there was a 3% gain in capital goods orders. And GDP did print at 2.1%, about 0.6% higher than was the first reading that we saw earlier in the month. So we'll see one more revision to GDP for the quarter. In terms of housing, there was some good buying in new homes. New home buying increased about 10% last month, according to the Census Bureau. And if you take the annualization of the of all the months, we have about a 4.9% annualized gain or increase in new homes purchases. On the other hand, retail sales declined about 4% in October. So there's some discussion about why that is, and it's possible there's some inventory issues and less people are selling their homes right now, maybe holding out a little bit longer to see if they can get a better number on their house, maybe a higher level of pricing. So they pull things off the market. Maybe it's just that there's just not the desire for people to move right now. We did see markets up also. It was a holiday shortened week, of course. We saw that Thursday markets were closed. Friday was a half day for U.S. markets. But we did see the NASDAQ did move up about 1% for the week. Dow edged up ever so slightly at about 0.37%. And the S&P was up marginally, 0.04% for the week in entirety. Now, next week, we're going to see pending home sales on Monday. Tuesday, we're going to see the November ISM Manufacturing Index. And that's important because that has been really starting to show signs of slowing. We've talked about many times the difference between the ISM manufacturing number and the service number, where services have been holding up really well, which is really good for the U.S. because 70 to 80% of our economy is based on services. So that's good. But for whatever reason, we're seeing that manufacturing is slowing, and that is a bit of a concern. But at the same time, we really know that the U.S. has been less and less of a manufacturing beast as it was from maybe the 50s, 60s, 70s, and we're shipping a lot of things offshore, and that obviously is having an impact on the manufacturing altogether, not to mention some weakened demand as well. In terms of some of the important Fed speak, there's a few things we'll talk about in a moment, but Wednesday is a discussion by Janet Yellen, the Fed chair, on the outlook for the economy. She's going to be speaking in D.C., and we're going to have the Beige Book coming out on Wednesday, and also the first part of the employment numbers comes out. The ADP employment change number comes out. So that's going to be kind of interesting to see how that plays out, because don't forget, one of the big things is that investors and analysts are all looking for a strong employment number. And as we have been hearing that the Fed is getting more comfortable with a rate hike in December, possibly, this jobs number is going to be very important to really seal the deal if it is as strong as we saw last time. Or maybe not even as strong, just strong overall. We're not weak. So we're going to be seeing a few different Fed speakers throughout the week as well. And then we're going to see the ISM services. Again, that's the service sector of the overall economy, is going to be coming out also on Thursday. And some interesting numbers and earnings reports from some important players in the retail space. Dollar General, Express, Five Below, Kroger, Sears will be coming out as well. Now, Friday, of course, we know that if we see that on Wednesday is the ADP report, and because it is the first Friday of the month, we're going to be seeing the official employment numbers, and that's going to be due out on Friday. Now, where are we going to go from here? We saw that last month was a blowout number, just an incredibly very, very good number in terms of new jobs added, as well as the fact that the unemployment rate is at 5%. Could we actually get below that? It's going to be interesting. So far, we did see that the initial claims throughout the month have been pretty strong in terms of, really opposite. We haven't seen a substantial amount of initial claims, and the numbers are still as low as they've been since the 1970s on a weekly basis. Of course, the number on Friday will all be very dependent on what happens with the labor participation rate, how many people are actually leaving the workforce due to retirement, just want to leave the workforce due to the fact that they're disgusted and just really discouraged and don't want to look for jobs. But the fact is that I don't see that we're going to see any major tick to the upside, maybe 5.2, 5.3. I mean, we maybe see a 5.1 or 5.0. Anything less than that would be really interesting to see. But if we do see that the number stays close to where it is now, 5%, maybe let's say 200 or 180,000 additions, there is a very high likelihood, at least from what they've said, that the Fed would take action by just a small amount, initial 0.25% increase at their December meeting. I don't know what you think about that. A lot of people, when I talk on Twitter, and I could put out a few polls over the last few weeks about, will the Fed actually raise rates? Most people said, not possible. Overwhelmingly, while there is the discussion about December being a rate hike, there's also that undertone of, man, the Fed is boxed into a corner and there's no way they can raise rates. Let's look what's happening with the dollar being at just over 100 on the dollar basket, which is a index that tracks the dollar against several major currencies around the world. And that is over 100. That's the first time in several months that it's been there, meaning it's very strong. And that being the case, how could the Fed be aggressively increasing rates? Well, we know the Fed's not going to be aggressive. We know that even if they do increase the rate, the fact is that they're going to do it very slowly moving forward from here. Who knows if it's going to take another year for them to increase rates? So right now, they may do this, and I don't know if, as we talked about last week and on DH Unplugged, that the potential is for a buy the rumor or buy the dollar and the rumor that the Fed's going to actually increase and sell the news. The one big issue that's out there is that we have tremendous amount of central bank policy and meetings that are going to go on over the next week. For example, on Monday, we have the Reserve Bank of Australia. Now, they're seeing all sorts of problems due to the fact that they're a major exporter of commodities, right? That their country's GDP has a big stake in the commodity business and is really not doing very well. So we'll see what happens with their currency. I don't know really what's going to happen in terms of the ability for them to reduce rates from here. But of course, we hear there's a lot of scope. Reserve Bank of India is on Tuesday, Bank of Canada Wednesday. And the important number and commentary that we're going to see is on Thursday. And that is the ECB. In the last few speeches, Mario Draghi has been, he's been really talking up the whole idea that he's going to increase the amount of stimulus through further quantitative easing, adding to the current program that he currently has outstanding, which is a pretty substantial program that hasn't been in place for very long. I don't know what he's going to buy, because already we've seen that Italian and German yields are in the negative range on their short-term debt, two-year, five-year in some cases. And we're seeing that the debt overall for the European countries that have been bought up incredibly by the ECB and those that are following their lead have been just absolutely bid up to a point. Just amazing that the yields in Europe are so much less than the yields in the U.S. Now, obviously, you would say, well, the Fed's talking about raising rates and the ECB is not even near that point. They are in clear stimulus mode with Mario Draghi threatening at every corner that he's going to do more and has scope to do more and will add if necessary. And even if he doesn't do it now, he may do it in the future, reserves the right to do so, et cetera. Really talking it down, where the euro has been just sinking. And there is a discussion that in not the near distant future, we're going to see that the euro is going to be potentially at parity to the dollar or lower. That's pretty incredible. I think the stars have to align just perfectly for that to happen. And I do think that Mario Draghi has to take action for that to happen. I'd be very surprised. I think I'd be surprised both sides. If he took major action, I'd be surprised. And if he doesn't take action, I'd be surprised. Because he, again, is another ECB or central bank official that has boxed himself into a corner with all this discussion of what he's had. I just don't see him actually doing anything about inflation, which is his main issue right now, about keeping this whole deflationary spiral from closing in on Europe with further quantitative easing. I just don't see it. It doesn't make any sense. And we all know the definition of insanity, right? It's doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Well, we know that all the quantitative easing that we've seen around the world thus far has not created one bit of inflation. In fact, just the amount of inflation that we have currently probably would have been there with or without the quantitative easing. And because all these countries are doing the same thing is why we're not seeing major inflation right now. So we'll have to see what happens with Thursday and Friday. But I'll tell you something. What's going to be very interesting on Thursday and Friday is that we're going to see some significant movement on currencies. Now, how that affects markets, we'll have to see. But clearly, there's going to be a massive move on anything because investors and traders are loaded up on one side or the other, primarily short the euro and long the dollar into these very important meetings. Now, what I thought we would do also is, as we are getting into December, and clearly, I think you'd agree with this, U.S. markets are holding up pretty darn well. We saw that China markets plunged almost 6% on Friday. Hong Kong was down almost 2%. And the Shanghai and Shenzhen just got obliterated because we're seeing, once again, China is doing some very crazy things. They're rounding up many of the executives from various financial institutions that may have been shorting stocks, may have been allowing excessive margin, and bringing them in for potential criminal prosecution. Now, we're also seeing that some executives have just simply gone missing. I mean, just vanished. Where are they? A couple have shown up a couple of weeks later and said they were being held by government officials and for questioning. That's a crazy way to do business. If China thinks that's going to actually provide a good amount of security for those people domestically in China and outside of China to invest in those markets, they got to be, really, rethink this whole thing. You can't start rounding up the executives and just, you know, looking at major criminal charges on them without any kind of process other than, middle of the night, kind of like, you know, kidnapping the guy and putting him in jail. That does not work well when you do that with the execs of companies. Companies have plunged due to this. And the fear is that China will continue to do so. And as they do that, and as they try to keep their markets pumped up, as they get crazier and crazier with their methods, this is the kind of volatility that we see. And even with that, U.S. markets on Friday, didn't blink. It's okay. U.S. markets are an island to themselves, I guess, right now. But I thought with that, let's talk about some of the key levels to watch. Because what if? What if markets do decide to pay attention towards the end of the year to much of the information that we're seeing? The headwinds from the U.S. dollar being so strong, the situation in Europe, Japan, the fact that oil and commodities are just continuing to break down, the unrest in Syria, Middle East, Turkey, Russia, and of course, what's going on in China. Maybe there's going to be a day of reckoning. Maybe there won't be, but let's take a look and be prepared for what happens. You know, like we talked about in our last episode, right? Do some planning, do some work to find out what is the next trend, what's the next idea, what's the next direction, where are we going to be, what is the catalyst. We talked all about trends, we talked all about the idea of looking at idea generation. Themes. If you haven't listened to episode number 439, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check it out on iTunes or any other podcasting source that you have, whether it's your smartphone, your computer, whatever it may be, and check that out. Because we talked about, I think, some really good ideas, and this falls right into that, and it's a good segue into this. The whole idea of, okay, where are the next levels? What are the points that we need to be aware of? We are clearly understanding that the U.S. major indices, the Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ, again, have been relatively resilient. The NASDAQ clearly being the number one performer of those three this year. The S&P 500 up a bit this year, and the Dow flat to a little bit lower for the year so far. Well, we know that if we continue on this kind of slog and this move as we've seen, Well, okay, we know the levels. We know the highs that we've seen recently, and that will be the point where there'll be resistance for each of the indices. But what about the downside? Where are the levels that we have to watch for breakdowns or for support? If the buy on the dip mentality holds for a while, and it continues to be those situations where things fall down for a few days or maybe a week or so, we get to that level and it starts consolidating. Things don't seem to consolidate very quickly lately. There's a big buy on that level. Just an instantaneous move and a V move, as we've talked about so many times, right back. But where are those levels? So let's talk about this. Now, to follow along with this, what you can do is go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can go to this episode, the show notes for this particular episode. You'll see it. Just click it. And there are three charts that we're going to talk about in particular. And what I did was I took a look at the trends. I took a look at important numbers like simply moving averages, but also more importantly, volume at price. Now, we really like this because if you think about what you do traditionally to draw support and resistance lines and trend lines, simply draw a horizontal line, maybe connect a few different points to the left of where support was from the perspective of the points where a price came down into. And you say, well, that's support. And you kind of draw a few different lines along the different levels. And you can look at support and resistance, top end, bottom end, etc. But what does that really tell you? It's just price at time. It's the time that a price has spent at any level. You don't know much more. You really don't have any idea, if you think about it, what is really happening there. Is there a good amount of time that was spent there, or was it just it got to that point and popped up? Rather, why don't we look at not how much time it spent at that level, but how much volume was played at that level? The buys and sells, the actual players getting in, getting out, and really working that particular level. Now, if we have that trend line for support and resistance, we really have a better understanding of where the traders are putting the line in the sand, where they're saying, this is where I'm putting my money, rather than just a simple movement of time at any particular price. So if that makes sense to you, you really have to think about, you know, think of this line in the sand concept, where as a trader says, well, I'm going to buy at this level, and that's where I'm going to put my money, versus it just happening to get to a level and bouncing. Now, there may be some similarities in the two. There may be some levels that it actually gets to, and it's very similar, or maybe even exact, because what's happening is you're really seeing where the big volume is. But if I see that there is a point of support that keeps on hitting, let's say 4 or 5 times over a range in a chart, and I just simply draw that line, well, what if it's just very thin compared to other levels of support in terms of where the volume is being played? What if it just happens to get there and just bounces, and maybe it's a bigger market condition, and that's why it bounced at that level? That's why there was support. While there is some benefit to using that, using a volume-based metric when drawing those same concept lines, those support and resistance lines, is very important. And we base that on what's called a market profile. And a market profile is a range of levels in a certain time frame of where the price is in terms of the volume. Where's the greatest level of volume at any given price? And that's where you can really put your money. That's where you can draw the line in the sand. So let's take a look, for example, at these charts over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Let's start with the S&P 500, because there's a lot more to look at compared to the other two when we look at the S&P 500 in terms of the support levels and potential areas that will be held to support. Now, the first one currently, the S&P is at about 2090 as we're talking right now. And the first level, if you can look across, there's a variety of different lines. There's a red dotted line, a blue dotted line, and a green dotted line. Each of these represent a range, a consolidation range. When you break below these, and again, these are based on volume at price. When you break below, you can see, for example, what happened where there was a nice consolidation in July and August, and what happened at the end of August, that gigantic breakdown, when it did finally get below all of the lines that were that consolidation range, and it just couldn't hold from there. Now, it did drop before that in the end of July. You see that it did drop below the green line for a little while there, but it held. And you can see that there are several other horizontal lines that we can then connect across from left to right. And the first one that we put, and we have a little bit lower than the actual because I added some other calculations to this, but essentially we have 2073 is the first level of support for the S&P 500. It's a pretty good level of support. I mean, there is some consolidation in the range from where we are right now, from about 2095 down to about 2075 or so. But if we get below that number, you can see that there really is no other horizontal lines on the entire chart that are drawn. As a matter of fact, that also corresponds to the 50-day moving average, which is the red thin line that's moving from squiggling all around the chart there. It's a little bit higher than the 200-day moving average as well. Now, where's the next level? 2041, as we see it here. There is a level there that there was some consolidation and there was resistance that the markets moved beyond in the latter part of October. And I would not consider this a very strong area either. 2075, 2073 seems to be a pretty good area of support. Again, not much lower. We're talking about, you know, about 17 points below where we are now, less than 1%. But there is good support there. If we break that, the next level should be about 2040, 2041. The next level, definitely a good level of support, about 2008, 2008 is a very good level of support, approximately. If you take a look at that, and again, you could have about 2-point differential here, depending on how you look at it, but there is multiple points of horizontal lines of support at volume at price that we can find going left. We always do what's called a look left on these charts. So that's the next one. And I'll sum this up in a second. If we do, in fact, break 2008 and we do get below 2000, next stop, 1957, we'll call it. Again, within that range. And then you get down to about 1920-ish. Because there really hasn't been any significant volume at any of those prices. There's been no consolidation in those areas. And while we could probably draw a line connecting the points just above the 1999, 1998 level, you see that in the end of August. You also see that in mid-September. And you'll see that in the beginning of October, there were, traditionally you would draw a line because you could see that there's three tops there. And that would be both resistance and support. When it breaks above, becomes support. When it breaks below, it becomes resistance. But we don't see that there was a lot of volume there. The real volume happened just above that at about 2008, 2007, right about there. And what we do is we look at and add up all the pricing action at that level, add up all the volume over that time period, and come up with this analysis. So keep this chart and look at the fact that when you think about what's happening with the S&P, maybe lay down your investments. If you're investing, whether it's broad market based, whether you're looking at overall market situations, how it's going to affect your current stocks, which is the way we like to look at this, because you know we know that about 70 to 80% of all stocks will follow major indices, which makes sense if you think about it. So what's happening here is look for about 2073, 2075, look at 2040, just over 2000, 2008, let's say, and about 1950-ish. Those are the numbers that you're going to look for support levels and for turning and for consolidation. As it breaks down, you say, well, that becomes now resistance. The next level is support. Let's scoot on over to the Dow. I'll give you a second to pull up that chart. I'm looking at the Dow. The Dow doesn't have as much of key levels that the S&P has. Really, the big one that I've seen here is about 17,580. Currently, the Dow is at 17,000, we'll call it 800, round number, and 17,580. Again, not a major level change from where we are now. That is a very good level because you can see that there are multiple times that we have those horizontal dotted lines drawn. Even better is 17,140. There is a tremendous amount of line in the sand, volume at price, that has been shown from September all the way through where we are today. Very good level of support. That would seem to be a level that I would say, because of the way the structure of these consolidation ranges that we have, this volume at price algorithm, that is an excellent level of support if markets do come down. We're talking about a 600 points move lower. Nothing terrible, but again, that is a level that is very clearly identified on the chart. It's very clear to see that there has been a significant amount of volume for whatever reason that has gone back for some time when we kind of add that all up across. Now, it's interesting because you're not seeing that actually in price and time, right? Time of price and price of time, depending on how you want to say it. There's not a lot. It's really, there's a little bit back in August and some in mid-October. But again, when we look at this, when we look at where the volume really played out, where the investors really put in their money and where they really hit hard on it, that's where it was over that period. And again, it doesn't have to correspond to the exact date, but this is the overall algo, the time range that we're looking at, all of it combined together, and that's why we get those particular lines. And the last one is about 16,920. That's another level. That's a make it or break it level. 16,920. That's important. 16,920. If we don't hold that, you're back down to 16,000 probably. Yeah, maybe 16,005 at first stop, but 16,000, there's really nothing down there. And that we could tell just simply by looking at how fast things moved down in late August, where it moved vertically down and where it moved vertically up in October. There wasn't a lot of volume there, not a lot of movement in that level, not a lot of time spent there either. So when you don't have time spent there, you don't have volume spent there, there's just no major line in the sand. So consider that. And finally, let's go to the NASDAQ real quickly. Right now, the NASDAQ at about 5,127. You look at this chart, the composite of the NASDAQ, we're saying that 5,050 is a pretty good level. Goes across to the left in terms of current levels of support in between a consolidation range and just below a consolidation range from August and September and October. That's an important line in the sand, 4,910, which is below all current consolidation ranges that we've seen and starting to get into the next level where it was a drag down on the market. So you kind of broke your support, your initial support, you broke your trend. That's what would happen if you got down to that level. And then 4,800 on the button is the next level. That's another make it or break it line in the sand there. If you break that 4,800, the potential for a downstroke is pretty intense because you see there has not been a lot of play there until you get to about probably about 4,550. So three charts, take a look at these. Like I said, there's a lot more that goes into this, but I wanted you to have these levels that we have identified as a clear support, and depending on if the price becomes below any of these levels, it then becomes resistance. And once it breaks above that, you have some clearing. So look at these as the ranges, big picture consolidation zones, the areas that you want to really focus in on, that if markets do change their current structure of kind of just not caring about any of the news around the world, maybe something does change, maybe it doesn't. But if not, this could be a real good game plan for you to follow, or at least have as something that you could reference. Print them out, put them on your desk, kind of mark those numbers down. If you have a trading system or an investment system that allows you to create alerts and messages, maybe pop-ups or sounds or emails or texts to you, put some of these numbers in and mark them down. Write some notes on the charts. what these mean to you, what you will do if, in fact, this happens. If it doesn't happen, just good homework. Just good, solid work that you did to be prepared for maybe you want to put a short, you want to buy a put, maybe you want to even buy on the dip. Whatever it is that your trading style says, these will be used, can be used as kind of your game plan. Now, speaking about game plans, our Arrow algorithm, which uses some of this, plus a battery of other technical indicators. We built this to be used just for the S&P 500. It is a strategy that we manage for clients. $50,000 minimum. But basically what I want to tell you about that was that we see pretty long stretches of periods where it's either long or short, very seldom simply just out of the markets. But we've seen some periods where there has been some very long stretches, you know, a couple of months, whereas in the past, you may have only seen a move into a long position or a short position for maybe a couple of weeks. And we're seeing that all of a sudden change. But now recently, we've moved to a position and it's changing again. As a matter of fact, it looks like Monday or Tuesday at the latest, there'll be a change from a long to a short position. It's actually going to go through a two-step process. It goes from a long, goes out, sells out the long, and then it buys or shorts the S&P 500. Three possible positions, right? Long the S&P, short the S&P, or out entirely neutral in cash. And the recent move that we've seen over the last couple of weeks was not enough to really convince the algo, as I say, to really be hardcore and convinced to stay long for a long period of time. And the recent kind of movement to the levels of a very shallow recovery from the sell-off we saw a couple of weeks ago has resulted in the fact that with the recent move and the long position that it took and the profit that it will take at this point, the scenarios that it's going to go short. If you want more information about the Arrow algorithm and how it works and how we can manage money for you and your money, maybe it's a good time for you to diversify into a more of a kind of a hedge type of situation where you can be long, short, or out of the market, dependent on technical indicators, not just fundamental, and give your portfolio overall some diversification beyond the trading that you do now, maybe the momentum trading, maybe the buy and hold that you have, maybe you know, just being very much into a certain sector or selection of securities, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and check out the Arrow strategy. Maybe it's a great time for the new year to get started, something like that. And by the way, what could be one of the catalysts that maybe change market sentiment? Well, we talked about China at the beginning of the show, that their markets plunged and some of the things that are going on there. We talked about the ECB and the Fed, but really it hasn't been an effect very much. Well, one of the things may be some of the news that came out about Black Friday shopping trends. Now, depending on what you read and kind of the tack that they're taking, you could see that the retail stores, the traditional brick and mortar, saw a very significant drop in overall sales and traffic. On the other hand, you did see also that online shopping, both traditional online and mobile, really ticked up very significantly. Now, whether or not the total of that is much more than the past totals and growth will be better overall, which is being expected to be about up 1.4% or so. Spending dropped a bit, but more items sold. And we'll figure out what this means. I really don't trust a lot of these metrics, to be honest with you, because I think it's very difficult for these companies to come together and really provide a very clear picture of all this. But one of the things that you'll see is that a lot of headlines are starting to talk about if Black Friday is as important as it was in the past and if it's something that we should pay attention to. Now, of course, that will come out in a really negative time when things aren't that good, because we want to make sure that we have an excuse of some sort why things aren't good. I don't know. On one hand, I would believe that, yeah, people can shop online, and the whole idea of Black Friday and all these great deals that you could probably get otherwise and somewhere else, and price shop and comparison price shop, is a much bigger situation now than it's ever been. So maybe Black Friday isn't as important. I went to a mall, actually. First time ever, I think ever in my life, I went to a mall on Black Friday. I wanted to go to the Apple store. I need to get something. And I got to tell you, it was 8 o'clock in the morning. I think the mall opened at about 8. And there was like nobody in the parking lot and nobody in the mall. And I was there from 8 till 9 o'clock in the morning. It was pretty scary. Now, this mall doesn't get a lot of those Black Friday shopping sprees that go on. It's a kind of a high-end mall in Fort Lauderdale, the Galleria. And it was very unimpressive in terms of amount of people that were there. I was pretty nervous about going there. I figured if the parking lot was full and I couldn't find a spot, I'll just turn around and go home and do it another day. But if by chance there was maybe just a normal level of cars in the lots, et cetera, that I'll go in and wait a little while if I have to and get this computer that I need. And it was kind of interesting how dead it was. But again, maybe not the best example of a particular place to look for Black Friday. But then I saw the news that came out and talked about the foot traffic was down so significantly. We'll see how this plays out over the next week. We already know that many of the big box retailers, the Macy's, Nordstrom's, the Dillard's, et cetera, have really been suffering. The big markdowns that are going on. We know that the teen apparel has been suffering as well, generally speaking. And malls have been seeing less traffic overall. So we'll have to see over the next few weeks and obviously into next quarter how sales really went for many of these companies that were very concerned about their sales overall when they reported over the last few weeks their earnings and their outlook over the next quarter. No matter what the case will be, we know that there was a major inventory buildup by many of these stores, and they'll have to be, they said they were going to be cutting prices and they were going to be dropping all sorts of sales or increasing their sales, dropping prices, and providing a massive amount of incentives, which is not really good for them in terms of earnings and margins. At the same time, we saw the discounters still do well. So maybe there's just a change in the dynamic of what's happening, and shopping is shifting from the traditional Black Friday, where people are just rush into stores and you see those fights and all that's on TV, etc., into a kind of a different dynamic. And maybe the overall sales will be the same, and maybe we could stop hyping this whole ridiculousness of opening up a day earlier or 2 days earlier or 3 days earlier, or what we're seeing on many stores that the new thing is not even opening up on Black Friday or Thursday and just not having these major sales. We'll see what happens. Anyway, we're going to end it there. It's holidays coming up. We are trying to focus in on the important items for trading over the next few weeks and into next year. Make sure to do yourself a favor. Listen to DH Unplugged each and every week. We air that on Tuesday evenings, myself, John C. Dvorak. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. And make sure to check out all the charts we talked about on this episode over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thanks for your warm holiday wishes, by the way. I got a lot of nice things and tweets and comments and emails from people about the holidays, etc. So thank you so much. Hopefully you've enjoyed this and give the gift for the holidays of a little maybe financial security, financial advice, a little help. Send somebody a little, hey, why don't you listen to this and give them our address on the web for the Disciplined Investor podcast. I think they'd really enjoy it, and you'll be doing them a favor. Share the love. Share the expertise that you've learned and you've mastered so far with this. Doing this since 2007, I think it was. So going on about 8 years now with this podcast, and of course, a pretty long time with DH Unplugged as well. Anyway, thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next week.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.